This program is brought to you by napsgear.org. For our international listeners, check out napsgear.org for all sorts of great deals on bodybuilding supplements. And while you're there, check out the info and entertainment section. They have a Q&A. There are picture contests. Right now there's a picture contest with 8 prizes of $1,000 per prize. There's blogs, cycle video logs, and even laboratory testing on some of the most popular products out there on the market today. That's napsgear.org. Naps supports Advices Radio, so Advices Radio supports them. Check with your local laws before purchasing.
Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices. Advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. Today we have, this is going to be an interesting conversation, and it kind of feels like deja vu. What do you think, David?
It feels like we're going to give a second try at this and see if it rambles a little less than the first try several weeks back.
So guys, this is David Johnston that I've got here with me, and you know, I know all of you were listening to Beyond Driven, and I know that all of you have listened to Geared Up, but for those of you that haven't, for those of you that didn't listen to the Geared Up podcast, I want to start out here by just talking a little bit about it. You know, Geared Up came out a couple years ago. They're over 100 episodes in now. The show started out just 3 guys that were into bodybuilding. They weren't in, like, any kind of like industry, celebrity name, anything like that. They were just 3 people that I really appreciated their viewpoints, and so did a lot of other people. The show grew. It got super successful. It became, in my opinion, one of the best podcasts that we've ever had in bodybuilding. And fast forward a couple of years, David Johnston had had enough. So he decided that he had pulled away from that, and he wasn't sure whether he wanted to podcast at all anymore. We did a couple of episodes of Beyond Driven. He's disappeared from there. David, I've gotten so many messages asking me, when's the next episode of Beyond Driven coming out? You'd be shocked if you saw how many messages. Just random posts. I'll post something that has nothing to do with it. And somebody says, yeah, that's great, but where's David Johnston? So. So David Johnston, he's right here with me.
I'm here, everybody. I'm alive. I died.
How you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing good. So, yeah.
I remember what it feels like to hold a microphone again.
Because you actually hold your mic. We have the same mic, which this thing is like a monster of a microphone. I've got mine in on a boom, and I've got all this fancy shit hooked up to it. You just sit there holding yours in your hand, huh?
Yeah, it's my attempt to pretend that I'm an awesome rap star from the 80s or the 90s, something like that.
Back when rap was the back, stuff I listened to.
Like back when they held a mic.
Yeah, back when they used to like really talk about killing people and doing 8-balls and stuff like that.
There you go. The hardcore days.
Yeah. So we had a conversation, and I'm going to say this is maybe a month or so ago. We had this long text conversation, and you were telling me like that you were just over everything with podcasting, and you just felt you felt burnt, and it sounded like you just felt like this pressure about what you felt like you needed to do as a podcast host. We talked for an extensive period of time.
You talking about when you initially reached out to me, or are you talking about when we just recorded last time?
I'm talking about when we recorded last time, because after this long text conversation, we got on the mic. We talked for like 2 hours, and it just went in circles and circles. And part of me wanted to release it, just throw it out there, let everybody hear for themselves, you know, just what our thought process was. And then part of me was like, man, this is just like 2 hours of us saying the same things. And
right.
I just couldn't bring myself to it.
Well, no, and put it this way, like when we were done recording that, to a large degree, that was an attempt to explain my point of view, and for sure, I realized the minute we were done, like, it was kind of crap, because I was as crazy as I've ever been, And I almost felt bad, you know, for you, Scott, in this position, thinking like you were obligated to put this out there when, you know, probably wasn't a good product by any means. So, you know, after that, I went on vacation, shut it down for a few more weeks, and I've just been away from the scene as much as I can be, given my profession and my passion for bodybuilding, and just, you know, feeling a lot better about where I'm at with everything. So we decided to give this a second shot and see if it's a little less rambly and a little more coherent.
That's funny, man, because I felt a sense of obligation to you because right. We spent the time putting that together, and I felt like, man, I want to put this out for David because I wanted to give you a chance to say what was in your heart, you know?
Sure.
And I felt a sense of obligation to the listening audience because I had a bunch of people asking me, you know, well, what's going on with Dave? What's he up to? You know, what's going on with Beyond Driven? So it's funny that you were thinking the exact same thing I was thinking, but neither of us said it.
Well, and that's kind of funny too, because one of the major topics we covered was the quality of the content that you're doing. You know, how important is it to have things polished and perfected and to really have a product that you're super proud of, you know? And that's kind of one of the topics that we covered ad nauseum when we recorded last time. And sure enough, we put together this product that was pretty crappy. You know, I'll be the first to admit it. And here you are now sitting there on top of it like, well, shit, what do I do? What do I do with this? So trust me, there was no harm, no foul by not putting that out. I was actually pretty happy that you didn't. So we'll see if we can get a little saner version this time around.
Awesome. And also too, like you said, man, you've had a little bit more time to process versus, you know, at the moment you were kind of like still in the midst of it. And I wouldn't have used the word manic, but you actually said manic. Do you feel like you were kind of like just on the edge there for a few?
Yeah. And not specifically, I mean, just, I'll be honest, you know, that's kind of where my life has been at. For anyone listening to this, you know, I've never been diagnosed with any kind of psychological disorder. But I have the creeping suspicion, the sneaking suspicion that I might have, you know, bipolar tendencies or even hypomania. So, you know, I saw a shrink for a short time in 2012 and it didn't do shit for me. It really left a bad taste in my mouth. These last couple months, I've been seeing one again, much better experience this time around.
Cool.
And to be honest, like I said, there's a part of me that almost wants to ask my doctor, you know, so what do you think? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Give me an official diagnosis. There's also a part of me that's like, who cares? Knowing that you have something oftentimes is an excuse. You can use it as an excuse to justify being a jackass, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Kinda
like, yeah, like, oh, I'm drunk, so let me do all the stupid shit I wanted to do anyways and use the drunkenness as an excuse. Same idea. You know, even if I am bipolar or whatever, the key is managing it and learning how to deal with life, regardless of whether you have that title or not. So, put it this way, two, three weeks ago, my family and I went on vacation down to Punta Cana, Dominican Republic.
Nice.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. Nikki told me in advance that I was obligated to stay drunk all day long. Good wife. She was babysitting me and pouring tequila down my throat from sunrise to sunset. And most importantly, you know, I turned my phone completely off from the minute we got to the airport for a full 7 days, which meant no communication with clients. No going to MuscularDevelopment.com, no going to Facebook, no checking the Geared Up forum, any of that. But, you know, the funny thing is, like, when we got back on the plane to come back, you know, some of my other friends had gone down there. We went down there for a destination wedding.
Oh, cool.
So several of Nikki's clients were there, people that were into bodybuilding, even though we didn't talk shop the whole time there.
Yeah.
I got on the plane. The one guy looks at me and goes, so did you hear about the whole Prime Nutrition, John Meadows scandal? And I smiled and I said, nope.
Yeah.
I heard shit about it. And, you know, that was a real big game changer, just knowing that I was totally dissociated from all of the industry drama that transpires on any given week. You know what I mean? And then coming back, like, part of me, because, you know, good example, I have about 40, 45 online clients that I work with.
Okay. Which that's a fairly decent amount of work if you're, you know, and I know the kind of person you are. If you have a client, you are going to be doing what they need. That's a lot to manage right there.
Sure. But at the same time now, that's all I'm doing. You know, before I was doing that plus in-person training, podcasting, you name it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely easier than where I was at. But a lot of them, you know, are using, for example, Prime Nutrition Intra MD per my recommendation. And because of that, there's a part of me that feels obligated to like get fully caught up to speed, like go back to square one. Where did the Prime drama start? You know, let's see who dropped the first video. Let's watch that video. Then let's see PJ's response video. Now let's read 20 threads on it. Let's read the Facebook forum on it.
Yep.
And there was a part of me that's like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. I'm not going to waste 20 hours of my time getting up to speed on every facet of this particular debate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really kind of ties very much to what we were talking about last time. Just, you know, the industry being so super saturated right now and how that ties to social media in general and kind of why I was, you know, getting really burnt out. And I think that's where, you know, you're having a little bit of that, Scott. And we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But just being as involved as you are and trying to stay as on top of things as you are. You know, it becomes challenging and tiring in a sense. So,
well, listen, that's kind of one of the reasons I had reached back out to you was because, you know, I tried as best I could to listen to everything you had said when we spoke before. And, you know, through our, not only that conversation that we had recorded, but also through all of our previous conversations, we had talked on the phone, we had talked a bunch through text. It was something that I really took to heart, and I really took seriously. A lot of what you had talked about was about the politics of this very small industry, and you know, you being somebody that I've always looked up to, you and Adam both, I looked up to you guys, especially like when we first started, and you know, I just had always thought you guys were doing really cool stuff. You both, to me, have had very, you've been a very valuable insight to me. And it was something that, like I said, I was taking very seriously, everything you had to say about that. And then in that last few weeks, that very situation that you're talking about with Meadows, I kind of threw myself right in the middle of it. And I have a problem with it, though, because Aaron Singerman, who is one of the people that was in the middle of this, is somebody that I've really also looked up to. He did something that I could only dream of doing. You know, he started out podcasting just like I am, and he built himself up into being like one of the most successful people there is. And I look at a story like that, and I see hope in that, and I see like, wow, if a guy like this could do this, I could do that too, you know?
Sure.
And it to me, his story has always been exciting, and he's been one of the people that have driven me. And then all the stuff comes out, and I couldn't help but feel like he was in the wrong, and I couldn't help but feel let down.
Right.
At the same time, and this is something that I picked up from you, I feel like you start out podcasting for fun. After a while, it kind of becomes a duty. It kind of becomes a duty to be honest and to say the truth. And
we can get lighthearted right now. I can say, you said duty. Sorry, had to throw that in there.
Yeah. Well, but it does, right? And that kind of becomes a burden. And so, you know, I found myself addressing that topic, and I couldn't help but have to speak negatively about somebody that I really looked up to. And that was upsetting to me, but I couldn't do it any other way. I couldn't talk about it any other way. And then, you know, people want to discredit the interview I did with John Meadows. People, very few, but that said, well, this whole thing was just based at PJ and that Aaron's getting away with something. And I felt like, well, no, that really wasn't my point. There's like literally a couple of people that felt that way. But it still, though, it felt like, made me feel like, okay, well, then maybe I didn't do my job well enough. So maybe I need to dig deeper into this. And I talked to John and I exposed a little bit more. And then I find out that Aaron Stern got fucked over by Aaron and PJ. So then I bring that interview out. And then Matt Meinrod fires back at me and says, oh, well, she's lying. And I feel like, okay, so when you, I believe that John Meadows was right in this situation.
Right.
I believe and I can't know for sure, but I believe he was. And I know you can relate to this, that if you're right, David, you can keep driving that point home. And sure. I can tell you what, man, I could have found somebody else. And then I could have said, okay, Matt, So Aaron's lying, you know, Aaron Stern's lying, you know, John Meadows is lying, and this person is lying. And then right. I can fire back and be like, and this person, and this, you know, you could keep fighting that fight all day long. And I know that I could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, but what the fuck is that going to do for me? You know, all that's going to do for us, the guy who's talking about it, is surround you with negativity, surround me with negativity. And we're then living our lives in this negative bubble. There came a point in time listening to Geared Up where I felt like it really did become a negative show. And I felt like you were always pissed off and Adam was always pissed off. and I did. And I felt like, man, I like what we're doing over at Bodybuilding Nerds because VJ and I are just having fun with it. And right. That's what I want to get back to, man, because I get it now. And I get why you were pissed off. I get why Adam was pissed off. Yeah. I don't want to have anything more to do with it. So a big part of me bringing you on today is I want to ask your advice too. But before we get to that on how I can continue podcasting and having fun with it, let's talk about what happened. Why did you burn out? Why did you feel like this was just not what you wanted to do anymore? Where did it start now? Let's go back to the very beginnings.
So by like 2013, I mean, I was just dying with the hours I was putting in. But I mean, at the same time, I loved it. You know, I wasn't struggling or suffering. And we moved into our new house, fall of 13. And right then, that's when I started working with Porter, looking to compete again in 2014. So I started to, you know, get my shit together on that front. And Adam reached out to me, you know, and Adam had told me that, you know, I knew he had been doing a podcast previously with Eric Posipal. I have no idea how to pronounce that name, so pardon me for butchering it. And they were doing the Elite Physique Report back in Chicago. And I'll be honest, like, to this day, I've never really listened to podcasts much, but back then I'd never listened to one in my life. So when he was telling me about this, I was like, oh, cool. You know, it was totally foreign to me. Yeah. Didn't mean anything to me. And I know that they had a falling out pretty early into their tenure. Just they wanted to go in really different directions. Essentially, Eric wanted to do contest coverage, and therefore he had to be a lot more politically correct. Adam, of course, had no desire to be politically correct or give a shit. So he decided to branch out, do his own thing, reached out to me, asked if I want to be a part of it. And again, our first show was the Olympia 2013 coverage. So it was September 2013. That's all I know. And at the time, like, I was so buried with my own work. I said, dude, I really don't have time for anything else on my plate. You know, what are we talking here? You know, like, what am I going to be responsible for? He said, all you got to do is show up every week, put your headphones on, and record. I said, really? He said, really. And I know that I have a tendency for, like, ending up stepping in and doing a lot of the work in a lot of scenarios.
Sure.
So I already kind of was nervous, but I said, all right, fuck it, I'll try it. And lo and behold, you know, it was really fun for the most part. It was myself, Adam, and Chris Genkinger in the beginning. Yeah. Adam was a lot better friends with Chris than I was, but I knew of Chris from back in the day on Intense Muscle, and I knew who Chris 250 was, and I'd met him, I think, a couple times. And, you know, we started doing our thing, and it was really foreign to me, but, you know, I enjoyed it. In the beginning, I was probably a bit more guarded, whereas Adam was, I don't even want to say transparent, but kind of purposely over the top, if you will, in terms of like the, not necessarily vulgarity, but, you know, open discussion on sex stuff or
masturbating or whatever else. I remember
the episode when he was talking about anal gaping for a good 20 minutes. I think it was the same episode where we talked about how he wanted to drop a nuclear bomb on New York because he hated New Yorkers. And I just like, wow, dude, this is the most over the top shit. Like, no one is going to listen to us after this, whatever. But it actually, you know, it worked well. Like, one really strong element of Adam McVeigh's personality, he's got a little bit of that Howard Stern thing where he knows the right buttons to push. He knows how to fuck with people, get under their skin, but get them to open up and be honest. And that's why he's really good at what he does, you know?
So at the beginning of this, then you were super excited, it sounds like. And it sounds like you were having a fun time.
There wasn't much of my tenure where I didn't enjoy it, you know, to be honest. Okay. Like, I really liked doing the show, and especially when I saw where it was growing. You know, a couple months in, we started putting an outline together per my recommendation, just because I thought it gave it a little more direction.
Sure.
You know, and the thing is, like, I saw this nice linear growth. I did the Emerald Cup in May of 2014, so about 7 months after we started doing the podcast, got there to the Expo, and a lot of people knew me, and, hey, you're David Johnson. And that was really surreal. That was bizarre, because I kind of stay, you know, intentionally off the grid a bit. You know, I keep eyes on certain things, but within like, good example, Adam probably knows every dude doing nationals has their numbers in his phone and has talked to the majority of them at some point in the last couple months. I haven't talked to one fucking person, you know, that's doing nationals in 4 weeks, other than my own clients. Good example. I'm just not as integrated into it, you know, and I never have been. I'm a little more of a, I don't know if you want to say a loner, but I just do my own thing. And so there was never a point where I didn't enjoy it, but I saw that it was growing, and that was surreal to me. And with that, in conjunction with how big my training company was growing, like, everything's going in a really good direction. You know, even though I'm not making money doing this, I'm getting notoriety from it, if you will, and not, you know, I'm not a fan of...
Did you guys not have sponsors yet then?
I believe we had some sponsors right out of the gate. I know John Meadows and Mountain Dog was sponsoring Geared Up right out of the gate.
Oh, you know, okay. But you didn't personally, you didn't see that yet, huh?
No, I mean, I don't remember how early in. So, like, I never made any money directly from Geared Up. All the money that's made from it is made through advertising. And, you know, Adam keeps that. And we agreed to that from the beginning. Like, I never had any problem with that because I told Adam, look, this is your baby. You run it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming with that, if he's putting the work into getting the sponsors, he keeps the money. You know, it's common sense. And I'm not, you know, a greedy person. So if at any point I had wanted to reevaluate that, I would have gone to him and I would have said, hey, can we talk, you know, money and maybe putting together a split or something like that. But that never, Adam told me all along, like, good example, Kevin Livroni lives out my way. And Kevin and I were talking at one point about some of my athletes being sponsored by his signature series. Okay. And we got Kevin to come on the show, even though he's with MD. I talked to him. He came on the show. And Adam told me point blank, if, you know, I got... If Kevin wanted to, you know, sponsor Geared Up and put some advertising up, I could keep the money on that. Like, Adam was really clear, the work that I put in, I keep 100%. So there was never any issues with that or anything. And at a certain point, we had enough sponsors where I started getting some free products, specifically from True Nutrition, from King Peptides. There were a couple of, from Iron Rebel, you know, Ed Koo, he's an awesome dude. So
yeah. Love his clothes.
But, you know, again, given... Like I said, you know, my training company was always my primary focus just because, like, that's what is putting money in the bank and that's what's going to put my kid through college.
Yeah.
And Geared Up was a fun site. It was the garage band for me.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it makes total sense, man. And I can speak for myself that I love the shows that I'm on. I have fun with them. It's like getting to hang out with my buddies, or it's like getting to meet somebody that I might not have had a chance to talk to otherwise, and just like shoot the shit. I'm shooting the shit with David Johnston right now, you know?
Sure. Well, and there was that, you know, like, it was super fun to get to interview these people. Let's not even talk about top pros, but let's just talk about, like, prep coaches. Good example, because I do that for a living. I viewed it as basically free ongoing education. You know, if I get to sit there and ask questions of Shelby, Jason Theobald, Phil Viz, Paul Carter, you name it, these dudes know their shit. And you're kind of blessed, if you will, or lucky, if you will, to have the opportunity to ask them, you know, Q&A for free and get all that information. And I learned a lot. It made me a better coach. It made me a better trainer. Not to mention, you know, the connections, getting the opportunity to actually go out and train with John Meadows for a couple of days, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just really, really cool opportunities. If anything, it gave me opportunities to do stuff that was fun and to know people, you know, going down to the Orlando Pro and running into Mark Erpelding. It's his pro debut and being like, hey, Mark, I'm David. How you doing? And just, you know, shooting the shit and hanging out. It was fun.
So this all sounds like an awesome time, man. And it sounds like podcasting is like a dream come true. Why quit? It sounds like at this point, man, there's no reason to not keep doing it.
Sure. Well, there was two things, you know, the first of which probably in the last 6 months, I did feel, and honestly, I think Adam feels the same way. I haven't talked to him and discussed it, but given the format that he's taken the show, the direction he's taken the show as of late, it was starting to get a little stale. There was a lot of pros where we almost felt obligated to have a format where it was like, all right, we have our intro, we have our pro booked, and then we have our outro, and we'll do some contest coverage and talk about industry happenings. But that's essentially the format. You know, we stuck to that format. Okay. And there were several people we had on there. It was just, you know, really underwhelming episodes, whether it was, and again, like, I just had him at my gym a couple months ago. Super awesome dude. So I'm not trying to be rude.
Yeah.
But when we had, like, Akeem Williams on the show, I wanted to sleep.
I don't remember that one. Maybe that's why. Reason, you know?
Yeah. Again, I mean, Akeem's been lifting less time than I have, you know, and his answer to everything was basically, I go to the gym, I train hard.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
he's got those crazy genetics where he can go deadlift 500 pounds
sure.
at five days out. And it just, it made for certain episodes where there just wasn't a lot of content. It was repetitious, if you will.
And you can't have all winners, though. You know,
no, I understand
that. It had to be more than that, because you can't, yeah, I understand what you mean. You want everything to be perfect, and especially, I know someone with your personality where you're a perfectionist. You want them all to be the best show ever. We know that's not going to happen. So what?
But my mentality, though, is if it's getting stale, let's make it better. Okay. You know, it. And I wasn't stressing over this, but
yeah,
that was why it was at some point this last summer 2016, Nikki and I went up to Rhode Island for the weekend to visit her grandpa, his birthday party. And we had that one episode where we just had on four listeners, you know, and it was Steve Inouye. It was Kyle, and I don't remember his last name either way. And it was a really fun show. You know, like, we took a chance. And it was my idea. I said, Adam, let's try doing this. You know, let's just try doing something different. And I was starting to come at Adam with ideas for different shows, whether it was, like, let's have a couples night where we have on, like, three different couples who all compete, and how do they deal with it? Yeah. Like, let's start having more thematic approaches and just trying to stretch a little bit. You know, get out of this shell, because if we don't, we'll end up being stale and boring. You know, anything that remains the same that long and becomes formulaic, obviously it's no longer entertaining. And Adam was pretty receptive to that, so I don't think that was so much an issue, but it was making it, you know, a little less sexy to actually sign on a Sunday night, for sure. But then so much of it was just, like I told you over email the other day, when we tried doing this conversation a couple weeks back, I don't think I made the point real clear, so see if I can make it clearer now.
All right.
It's the nature of what you do as a podcaster, or if you're on the news, or if you're on TV. I mean, it's a form of entertainment, you know, simple as that. And the way I look at it with entertainment, you're only doing one of a couple things. You're either being funny, okay, like, and people will listen to you because it's amusing, which is why you watch a lot of TV.
Sure.
Or it's because it's educational, you know, like you're trying to pick up something and learn something. There's not a whole lot of functions that you're going to serve doing this. To a very real degree, you know, doing a podcast, since you're covering, like, industry happenings, it's going to be kind of like doing the news a little bit. Right. Meaning, like, each week you're staying on top of what's going on and you're kind of reporting on it and then maybe commenting on it, giving your opinion on it, if you will, like an op-ed piece, whatever. Well, the nature of the news, by definition, is kind of inherently negative. You know, and for anyone that doesn't agree with that statement, watch your nightly news tonight. See how many stories there are where it's like, on a positive note, you know, a puppy was saved out of a tree today.
Yeah. What you pointed out in text to me, and I think you summed it up really well, you said the news is pointing out what's not working.
Right. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's what it's about. And that's, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just what the news is.
But
think about, like, when you go to work.
Focusing on that, then.
Sure. Think about when you go to work and you start chatting with a buddy, like guys standing around the water cooler. You might talk about the football game. If you're a little bit younger, you might talk about the chick you banged over the weekend, whatever. But then when you start getting older, what do people small talk about? World events, whether it's politics, whether it's what's happening in the Middle East and Russia. That's what people just tend to gravitate to talk about, you know. And with podcasting and bodybuilding, you know, for the most part, we're bringing up the direction the sport is moving. You know, obviously we covered that on pretty much every episode, and all the things that we, myself, Adam, and Dave Smith, considered silly or ludicrous about that. You know, the everybody's a winner, the umpteen new divisions, you get the point. So a lot of that was just not super positive. And, you know, you're covering it over and over and over. And I started to feel at a certain point, like, just a grumpy old man, you know. I'm sitting here pissing and moaning about the sport that I supposedly love, and all I do is complain about it.
Yeah.
Or point out how ridiculous it is. Now, I'm of the mindset that if you're just going to sit there and bitch about it, you should do something about it. Meaning, like, and I gave you the analogy the other day, obviously we're on the cusp of this crazy historic election that Lord knows where we're going to be in 4 or 5 years, but there seems to be a general consensus that this is the craziest political election that's ever occurred, right? And everybody's on Facebook nonstop just talking about it and having opinions on it and talking about how fucked up and stupid it is. And my question then is, how many of those individuals are actively really trying to do something about it? And I'm not talking going out and voting, and I'm not talking, even posting up an opinion on Facebook. I'm talking like getting together a rally or something like that.
Most people don't.
I understand that. And I'm just the type of person where if I think it's that stupid, I'm just not going to pay it attention. I'm not going to participate. My time, I feel, is limited and valuable. And again, I don't want to get this conversation going in too abstract a direction. I think we talked about this last time, Scott. You've heard of the 80-20 rule. You know what it is? What's vaguely. That? 80-20 rule. It's usually used in business, but I'm a firm believer. I try to apply in all walks of life. We end up as individuals spending about 80% of our energy on what produces 20% of our return. Mm. So a good example, if you run an office, you know, a company where there's 100 employees, 20 of those 100 dudes are going to be your top earners. Yet, as the boss, you're going to spend 80% of your time basically dealing with the fuck-ups, dealing with the delinquents, dealing with the people who aren't hitting numbers.
Sure.
Right? And good business teaches you shouldn't do that. You know, really, you should be spending 80% of your energy on maximizing those 20%ers, and you'll end up making a lot more money. And just let the 80%ers leave. Yeah. You know, they're problems. They're not doing anything to really enhance your business.
Okay. So how does that translate then to us?
I try to apply that in all walks of life. Meaning, if politics is, like, good example, this election, it's fucked no matter what. Yes?
I agree, man. I don't get political, and I think right. It's kind of for the reason that you're talking about right now. I don't believe in either party, and I just in general don't believe in the Democrat or Republican Party. I feel like it's just more of the same always.
But I honestly think the majority of the people out there expressing their thoughts and opinions on the subject are in that same boat, you know, where they think this is just stupid, this is a scam, and we're fucked either way.
But
they're still spending so much time thinking about it and focusing on it. Like, I think the biggest message you could send politically this year would be if voting numbers were down 80%. And we're still going to get stuck with a douchebag no matter what.
Right, but that was going to happen anyway.
the best thing everyone could do this year is not vote.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Because by supporting the system, you're sending the message that you still think it matters. And if everyone just collectively sent the message, this is stupid, it doesn't matter, we're not going to play your stupid game, again, we'd still be screwed either way. But that would say something. It would say something to our leaders. It would say something to the world. What it would do, who knows? But at least it would be different.
So that's the vote you're casting in,
right?
In your vote in bodybuilding,
a little bit. Yeah, it was just so much. Like I said to you, I started to realize, and again, you know, the podcasting thing, I'd be totally full of shit. It wasn't just podcasting. It was that in conjunction with like where my business is at, my training company. I wasn't really happy about the direction that had gone in the last year and a half once I brought on a lot of other trainers under myself, the branding and all that. You know, I turned it over to another individual, and all of a sudden it went from this darker David Johnston style stuff to this really preppy, yuppie crap that I had no interest in being a part of. And it was just everything. You know, like I felt with Geared Up, we were fighting the good fight, if you will. And like, you know, we had talked about the beginning days. Part of what made Geared Up awesome in the beginning is that we had no affiliations with anybody, and we were not political, so we could say whatever the fuck we wanted, didn't have to worry about offending people, didn't have to worry about stepping on toes, and we retained that pretty well throughout, you know, the duration. Meaning Adam obviously doesn't care
right about
being controversial or pissing off Jim Mannion, or, you know, none of it matters to him, which I think is terrific. I really do. But in time, like, as I was putting more competitors on stage, my name was getting bigger, and I was having to worry a little bit about what did I put out there? Did I say this? I was told point blank by somebody that Jim Mannion had listened to our show early on and was not a fan.
Okay.
I was told this by a big show promoter in my region.
That's interesting.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting there like, all right, well, how much do I censor my thoughts on things versus how much do I, you know, which for the most part I didn't.
But still, that's a pressure. And I don't think people see that when they're in the listening audience, that that even if you're not going to censor what you're saying, you're making the choice not to. And that's a pressure then that you're living with and you're carrying in order to still say what you believe is true.
Well, and I don't care how much somebody says they're transparent. Like, Scott, you're dealing with that a little bit now.
That's what I'm saying,
There were times when Adam was dealing with it, which we didn't air it, but there were specific instances. I'm sorry if there's background noise.
What are you in a freight facility or something? Sounds like there's a ship pulling up or something.
Apparently, the people that mow my lawn decided they were going to show up while I'm recording this. So.
Motherfuckers.
I apologize. If it gets annoying, go kick them out.
All right.
But, it was just, like... There were instances where Adam was stuck between a rock and a hard place. And, you know, he had some inside information. He wasn't sure if he should put it out there. Was he obligated to put it out there or to sit on it? Would he, you know, piss off a contact or a lead if he put information out early? Mm. You know, good example, like, we had inklings of the whole Prime thing long before it went down. Really? I didn't know the details, but I heard some rumblings, and I knew some shit was coming. Not to mention, if you read into the... I mean, look at how it happened. All of a sudden, Meadows isn't on any of their advertising, and Seth Ferrosi is their new kid.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he's the all-American badass or whatever his stupid thing was, where he's trying to appeal by having a rugged blue or blue-collar beard and shooting rifles. In other words, they tried to take the whole John Meadows shtick of being an all-American grinder and just put it on somebody else's physique like I wasn't going to notice. So, there was writing on the wall, but... Anyways, I'm getting off track. Point being...
No, not at all, man. This is the point. That is the point.
Yeah, but I guess the point is you're in this position of, all right, do I cut my nose off to spite my face? How much am I willing to rally for quote-unquote truth or for what I believe in at the expense of possibly screwing over my business, screwing over my family, not making as much money? These are questions that we all deal with, I think. But I was always of the mindset that, like, with Geared Up, okay, we were growing a culture that mattered. We were growing something that could possibly be an alternative to the direction the industry had gone. And I think part of the reason so many fans were loyal was because of that. You know, there are a lot of bodybuilders out there and people that compete in other divisions as well that aren't fans of where the sport has gone these last 5-6 years, feel it's become very commercialized, feel it's become very pussified, watered down, and so on and so forth. And I think that's really, you know, the majority of the Geared Up fan base. The old school, they don't want the glam, the insta-famous glam so much as they want the olden days. You know what I mean? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree.
So I kind of always felt like, okay, this is important for us to grow and turn into something. And I felt Adam started taking steps in that direction, you know, doing the Gathering of the Good Guys Summit. But I just hit a certain point where I felt it was almost like I woke up one day and I was kind of shocked because I've always poured myself into trying to build this community, if you will. And I just felt like no one else really gave a shit about putting effort into it. You know what I mean? And a good example, you know, the breaking point for me, I think you know this, was the weekend of the Baltimore Pro. The promoter of it was first year they're holding the show. He reached out to me via Sean Ray, said he knew, you know, I knew a lot of bodybuilders in the area. So I did what I could to help get the word out, advertise a little bit. Adam came in for the weekend. Dave Smith came in for the weekend. We got a free booth at the show. The show itself was, you know, a big letdown in terms of attendance. No one showed up, which, after talking to Boris further, you know, he was actually out a couple weeks ago in Barcelona for the Arnold Europe, and he was talking with Rafael Santore, who's the president of the IFBB. And from the sounds of it, you know, I've now heard from enough upper-level promoters, Tim Gardner, you name it, you cannot populate a pro bodybuilding show by itself. Like, it will not draw more than a couple hundred people tops, and you will not make your money back, which is why they're all going to pro-ams. Next year for the Baltimore Pro, he's looking to make it almost like an Arnold Classic type thing with several other sports involved, etc.
Okay.
But either way, you know, and that, you know, that is what it is. Fair enough. I might not know the industry as well as these other individuals. But I just felt like that weekend we had an opportunity to really politic and push for a, you know, let's save bodybuilding type mentality, if you will. And I just felt like the effort and the energies put forth were not there. You know what I mean?
What do you mean by that?
Again, the day after the show, you know, we were hosting a seminar at my gym, and I had already stepped back a couple months ago and turned a lot of power over to other people that were a part of my team, Team Warrior Within, you know, to help organize the seminar and all that stuff. And you know, because I knew that I needed to step back and take a little break because I was already coming to the edge of the end of my leash when it came to sanity, if you will, with how hard I was working and everything I was doing.
So you felt like it was getting worse back then even, huh?
Yeah. Like, I already started having trouble earlier in the year, like March, April, when I was in prep, just because, you know, one of my trainers passed, and I had a couple of business ventures fall through, and then I started having digestion issues. So just shit started to...
I remember that.
Yeah, just various things started to kind of, like, add up. And it was tricky because I already had consciously decided this was going to be my last year competing, and I already kind of had one foot out the door. And I had one foot out the door in part because I just wasn't a fan of where the industry had gone. I didn't really want to participate right now. You know, and like I said, my daughter's 7 years old. I'm 37. I'm hitting a point where I got to start thinking about long-term health more so than just immediate, you know, let's get bigger. So I'd kind of taken bodybuilding, competitive bodybuilding, as far as I wanted to take it, or as far as I was willing to take it. And with that, I was committed to, like, shutting it down after the season. Then, with us constantly being negative about the direction of the industry, you know what I mean? And sure enough, for once, I actually reached out to other people, like, hey, can you help? I need help. You always tell me if I need help, just ask. Well, I'm asking. And I kind of let them do their own thing. And I came back to see what had been done in terms of organization. And I mean, I'll be honest, I was embarrassed of the people that I work with and hired to help organize this stuff, because just there was no energy put into it. There was no effort put into it.
Oh, sorry, man.
Oh, no. I mean, whatever. It is what it is. And put it this way, I was helping out this promoter of the Baltimore Pro for free. You know, I wasn't earning anything. I was doing it because I love
bodybuilding. Right. But you were putting your name on it, so.
Sure. And that's the thing. Like, I think so many people don't understand in our industry and with what we do, there isn't going to be a one-to-one exchange of effort for a dollar. You know, you have to build a reputation. You have to build a network. You have to build your brand. Really good example on that front would be, you know, Matt Porter, who I worked with. I've never talked economics with Matt. I have no idea how much he earns as a coach or with his supplement line. But I do know several years back, you know, he was on Muscular Development in that thread, putting up so much valuable information, you know, on how to peak for a contest, how to manipulate diuretics. And it seemed like he just had this overflowing passion for, I won't say helping people because that's generic, but for helping people not fuck up as bodybuilders. You know what I mean? He can't stand seeing people screw up stuff. Yeah. He has this almost neurotic, like, I don't want to see you fail. He loves seeing people succeed. And that was why I knew he was the coach for me. You know, I knew that he was invested in my success, not just in my money, but in my being the best that I could be. And he almost had this egomaniacal pride in making sure that you were at your fucking best. And that's the kind of guy, you know, you want to go to war with, because he's got your back. He's going to fight with you. He's going to stay up with you till 2 a.m. if he needs to make sure that you're filling out properly, you name it. But anyways, I feel so much of Matt Porter's name got out there because he was really just building that community. You know what I mean? Showing the value that he had to offer and giving it away almost for free. Nowadays, I'm guessing, you know, he's so busy, he can't even take on clients.
Yeah.
So I really feel so many in the industry don't understand that if you want to get something back in terms of dollars, you have to put out value first. And that's why, like, I was helping this promoter out for free. It's because I just love bodybuilding, and I knew that in the long run, it would come back to me somehow. You know, it would end up making me more money or getting my face out there more or whatever. So I didn't have any problems with doing that. But when I came and looked at the job we had done, I was pretty embarrassed. And I felt like I hit a point where if I wasn't the one doing like 100% of everything, it just wasn't being done well.
Yeah. And I feel like for guys like you, and I say that because guys like you are guys like me, that I can relate to that. It's a lot of pressure that you're putting on yourself because you do want everything, like I said earlier, to be 100% all the time. By the way, we have a nice clean connection now that your
neighbors left.
Yeah, now that they left for the day. That's not your fault, man. You can't control that stuff. But
like, really good.
I just want to kind of like direct us back though, because I want to get
one thing. I got to throw this in there real quick. One thing I thought of when we're, you know, because I didn't know the exact questions you're coming at me with, and I wanted to make sure we didn't ramble as much this time. But one thing I'm really big on is constantly stepping back with whatever I'm doing, whether it was with my training company, whether it was with Geared Up, whether it's with this interview we're doing right now. And I do this a lot. I do this as a father. And I say to myself, I say, is this something that I'm going to be proud of in 20 years, in 40 years? Is this something where I can stand on the top of a fucking mountain, you know, looking down at the rest of the world and just know, like, I did shit on my terms, my way, no regrets, no feeling like a douchebag, no selling out. And because of that, you know, even when we were talking about Geared Up getting a little stale, and you said, oh, they can't all be winners. No, I understand that, but that's why I'm always hungry to make sure I'm self-assessing. Are we making this better? Are we doing something that is awesome? And that, you know, fuck the money, fuck the fame, fuck all that stuff. Is this something where, like, I look back on it 10 years later and I get goosebumps because I know I was the fucking man.
Okay, so is it that you can't do any better than you have then? That's it?
A little bit. I just hit a point where I felt with where the industry is at and what we were doing with Geared Up. I always felt with Geared Up we were trying to kind of fight the industry. And by the industry, I just mean kind of the direction things have gone with social media and with, you know, the insta-famous umpteen divisions, shows that are 500 deep with no quality, all of it, all the shit we've talked about the last 3 years. I always felt we were talking about this in an effort to change it. And I just hit a point where I felt like, you know what, knowing no one was willing to really go to war with me to change it. Mm. And at that point, and growing that much, I felt was worthwhile. Again, if we were going to rally and make a charge to try to really make change, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But you know, okay, here's what I'm thinking too, though. So I think back to myself, and you know, we've talked about this before, that you know, we all, a lot of us started bodybuilding in the same places. We, you know, my story is probably very similar to yours. If not, you could relate to mine telling you about when I was a kid training in my parents' basement, and that's when I fell in love with it, and Flex magazine, and you know, Weeder and this and that. You know, back in the 80s, those were my passions for bodybuilding, and things have evolved along the way. But when I feel like I'm getting disconnected, I look back at that base and I look back at like why I fell in love with this in the first place, and the drive and the being the truth and leading this charge. That was something that evolved. You started out doing it because you loved it and you were hanging out with your buddies. What about getting back to that? And that's what I was hoping for you with Beyond Driven, was an opportunity to kind of shed all the stuff that wasn't working for you and get back to just the parts that were fun. And quickly it became the next drive, you know, the next direction, the next charge.
Sure.
What about just having fun? What about just hanging out with your buddies, that garage band that we were talking about before?
Right. Well, again, first of all, I think that that's a very legitimate possibility. I think I just needed more of a break. You know, gotcha. when you gave me the opportunity for Beyond Driven, it sounded like a great opportunity. I'm not going to lie. There's a part of me that's kind of scared because I've built this huge reputation and I've been able to sustain a client base from that and, you know, support my family and make good money doing that. But a lot of that along the time was making sure that I was keeping my name out there to some degree.
Okay.
Whether via the podcast or via blogging or whatever. And, you know, now, like, I'm not even in the gym anymore. I'm just doing online coaching. There's a part of me that's like, man, what if these leads start drying up? What if my name doesn't sustain itself over time? What if, you know, right now I still get a good 3 to 5 inquiries every week from people looking for coaching. But, you know, in time that could very well come down lower. And I worked really hard to establish that and build that.
You could build it up, of course. But
oh, yeah, yeah. But my point is, when you came to me with an offer for the other podcast, there was some of that in the back of my mind. You know, like, obviously, okay, Keeping my name and face out there and staying somewhat relevant,
sure,
is beneficial, you know, for what else the other stuff that I do for a living. And then part of it, I did have an idea that I thought was a really good, unique idea that would be a lot of fun. And I still do, you know, honestly, but I think it was just, I needed more time, you know, and I jumped at it prematurely.
Yeah.
I should have spent, you know, a month or two doing some test recordings and, you know, really building it up. And that was part of the reason Geared Up was so much fun in the beginning, was because I told Adam, like, look, it's your thing. All I'm doing is showing up and putting headphones on.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to worry about the technical aspects. I didn't have to worry about uploading it. Even with all that stuff, you know, Adam had somebody that was helping him. I think he was training an individual in exchange for editing the show, posting the show, creating banners for the show, yeah, all that jazz. But, you know, part of the reason Adam was able to build Geared Up like he did was because he really poured himself into it, you know.
Yeah, and it was obvious too, you know.
Adam put 10 times the effort into Geared Up than he did into his clients. You know, me, I put 10 times the effort into my clients that I did into Geared Up. So because of that, Geared Up was able to build up, get off the ground. You know, because Adam is so good at networking, he has everyone's number in his phone. He talks to people on Facebook all the time. I don't do any of that, you know. So I didn't realize, like, when I started doing it, oh, shit, I'm kind of at this big disadvantage. Like, not only have I never done any of this, but it's stuff that I'm just not into. Like, I don't need to have Kevin Jordan and 8,000 other pros numbers on my cell phone, and I'm not going to text them on the regular because I'm just not a chatty person. I'm not a super sociable person, if you will.
Sure.
So, you know, that made it more challenging. But then on top of that, you said, can't you just have fun with it? Again, like, yeah, I can. Like I said, it kind of depends on the content and what we're doing. When we were just interviewing pros every week, like I said, there comes a certain point, in my opinion, where it gets really mind-numbingly boring to talk sets and reps and drugs.
Sure.
Because like you said, you know, we do all have the same story. And I couldn't even begin to tell you how many people we interviewed where, you know, we always say, how'd you get started? Well, I had this plastic sand or plastic cement weight set in my basement from Sears. Like, that's everybody.
Right.
So there comes a point where it's like, all right, we're just covering the same ground. Which to me, like I said, I want to make sure this is something that I'm not only having fun doing, but I'm also proud of it. Okay. Gotcha. So I wanted to maybe, okay, let's try pushing this in a different direction, come up with some more unique angles on things, which is what I was trying to do and start doing with Beyond Driven. I'd even talked to Adam, and we were going to maybe start talking about regrouping a little bit, because I think he's getting sick of the direction the show has started to become repetitious, which is why he's doing more. You know, every week isn't having a guest on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're doing more roundtable, just bullshitting, shooting the shit. And honestly, that might be good for them to get back to a little bit of that.
Sure. And if you ever came back to that too, I bet you everybody would love to get your opinions again. Maybe that's what Geared Up needed, was just to kind of get back to its roots.
A little bit, I think. But either way, it needed to make sure that it was not becoming formulaic, you know. And as it grew and Adam was more connected, I think there was more, I don't want to say concern, but more awareness of, you know, who we're sponsored by and are we stepping on toes. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Adam ever made any decisions and purposely censored himself.
I truly doubt he would have.
No, I agree. But but it's still, like you said, it's still there. So in terms of the fun aspect of it, Scott, you're married?
Yep.
How long have you been married?
Actually 7 months now, I think.
Oh, so man, I'm pushing 9 years, so it's a different story.
Yeah. All right.
Once you've been married for 5 years, trust me, sex is still fun, but it's not as fun as it was when you were dating in the beginning. And anyone who's been married a long time will know exactly what I'm saying. It sounds crass, but it's true. You have to find ways to make stuff still fun. Sure. You have to be creative, and fun isn't always automatic. Fun sometimes takes effort.
Yeah.
Because if you're just getting together complaining about the same shit, well, that's not fun. It's okay. Draining. It's exhausting. So I think we were on the cusp of starting to rearrange things in a direction that would have been more fun. Unfortunately, it just kind of hit at a time when, like, I was taxed beyond belief and so sick of shit. And that's why I was really intent on making sure that, like, if this wasn't making my life better in a lot of ways, I had to, you know, make sure I step back and put my energy into family. And that's why doing this talk the second time around is a lot easier for me than it was the first time. It's because when I went to Punta Cana and I came back and I just I felt really confident in the decisions I had made. This might sound strange, but like, I'm kind of out of the loop. You know that, Scott. Like I said, yep. I'm off the grid. So when I get these emails from people, and I've seen people post, like, shit, there was a thread on Muscular Development not 2-3 days ago where someone brought up, you know, podcasts. And they started talking about how this podcast is great and that podcast is great. And then they said, you know, Geared Up, it was better when David was there because he brought balance to Adam. And someone else said, well, they can't listen to it anymore. When I read stuff like that, it's very strange and foreign to me because I don't feel I'm as aware as some of you guys. Like, I'm sure you know how many listeners you have, and Adam always knew how many listeners he had. Plus, he was interacting with so many people. To me, I would hear that stuff, and I'd be like, oh, that's neat. But it was an abstraction. It wasn't real.
It is removed no matter what, man. It is removed because it's not like you're meeting all these people in person. Even when you can see the numbers, I can't, you know, calculate it in my brain as to how many ears that means are hearing it.
But with all that, you know, there's a part of you where once you're out there, again, you have, I don't want to say, I hate the word following, you're minorly famous in the industry, if you will. And that's an asset. You know, that's something worthwhile. That's something that you can leverage into money. That's something that you can leverage into happiness if done properly. You understand?
I do. And so that kind of almost leads me to a question. So,
hold on really quick. That's why when I got back from Punta Cana, I was really nervous about just purposely letting that go. And when I got back and I saw like the time I'd had with my family, you know, I've been training just from home now for about 4.5-5 months, been able to sustain my income, and it's a, you know, decent income, working far less than I was, spending way more time with my daughter, helping her with her first project for the second grade and all this crap. It made it a lot easier to be like, you know what, this was the right call. Right now, like I said, I just don't feel I'm in a position to be the lead charge on, you know, a project like that. And then the other thing too was, I feel, we talked about this a little last time when we recorded, I won't go into all of it again, but after watching the Olympia this year, I felt certain things were just made a lot clearer where, put it this way, the industry is what it is and it's not changing anytime soon. And it's because, you know, the powers that be finally figured out how to make money with bodybuilding. That's not to say bodybuilders are going to be making money, but it's going to become slightly relevant again, in my opinion, in the next 5 to 10 years culturally. You know, you might even see it on TV a couple times and shit like that.
I could see that. I think it's scheduled to be on TV again next year.
Yeah, on CBS or whatever.
Something like that. NBC maybe this time?
That was NBC last time.
Oh, okay, so CBS this time.
The Rock came out. Right. I think it's CBS Sports, yeah.
Wait, I thought you didn't follow this stuff anymore.
I'm
messing with you, man.
Well, and that's the other thing too. It just started taking so much of my energy. Like I said last time, I told you this last time we recorded. You know, 3 years ago, I would get really excited every year for the Ironman, for the Arnold, for the New York Pro, and for the Olympia.
Those are the big shows.
They were like the only shows, you know. And each one had a pretty good lineup. You know, a good five to eight guys that were all competitive. Now, the Olympia this year really was great. But beyond that, the shows now, there's a show every weekend. The lineups are pretty bad. You know, like I'm looking right now, they just put out the list for the Frigno, which is this coming weekend, and I have a competitor in it. But in men's bodybuilding, you know, you got Pablo, you got Justin Compton, and no disrespect to the rest of these guys, you got Michael Lockett and then Lucas Osladil.
Yeah.
And out of 16 guys, you got all these guys that like are never even going to sniff a top 10 placing. And you got your front runner at every show who's just trying to get his Olympia qualification. Then you got the rest of the lineup. I don't know. It's just, come back to that idea of the 80-20 rule. When I'm on YouTube looking for music that I really like, you know, I look for music that's really exceptional that I'm going to remember, you know, and really connect with. Same with books, same with comic books, same with movies. Well, it's the same with bodybuilding. You know, I think the actual awesomeness of bodybuilding as it has exploded, it's not as awesome as it was, you know, even 10 years ago. And yet it requires four times as much investment to stay on top of it. Hmm. You know what I'm saying?
You might not agree. I don't know. You mean four times as much investment to stay on top of it because there's so much information available?
Right.
I see. Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess it's all in how much you love it and it's evolved. And you know what? If you love it, you just follow it because you enjoy it, not because it's a job, you know?
Sure.
So I think some of that for you might be mindset right now.
Well, and I do still follow it, you know, but I'm trying to put, I guess, parameters or boundaries on how I follow it.
Sure.
So like, again, good example, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't know what Phil Viz trained yesterday. And I didn't
know.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Just the inundation of that. And to the point where, again, I'm not the type who's sitting on my phone all day messing around on Facebook, but I imagine there's just so many people out there that are just so all consumed by it now. And bodybuilding is an all consuming lifestyle. So I was always consumed by the lifestyle of it, but not the talking about it aspect of it. And, you know, we covered this ad nauseum last interview, so I won't go into a ton this time, but just, I don't know. I'm at a point with the modern world and where it's at. Good example. Go on Google, Scott, and search for anything, anything you want. 5 years ago, you could get some really valuable information in the first page and figure out, I don't know, like how to build a rocket out of duct tape and gunpowder and whatever. Nowadays, there's so many people posting so much crap to just interactive websites, whether it's Reddit or Yelp or whatever.
Right. That,
like, the last few times I've tried to search for something on Google, it's shit. Like, I can't, like the level, the quality of information return is like 20% of what it used to be 5 years ago.
No, I think everybody can relate to that, man, for sure.
But to me, that's nuts. And I talked to you about this last time. That was why I was kind of like, well, if I'm not putting out something that's really quality, then I'm just another person contributing to this assholery. And I'd rather just not, you know, like let everyone else be important and let everyone else, you know, talk for everyone to listen. And I'll just hide and let them do their thing and read some really good books and follow the pro shows. And so, yeah, I'm definitely, there's a part of me that's still interested in doing it. I might do it at some point. I would definitely want to make sure that it had a unique angle, which is something I talked to you about in the beginning. You know, Geared Up has its angle, you know, PED with Stevenson. Obviously that's going to be the most intellectual show out there in terms of the technical science of bodybuilding.
I'm getting more and more into him. That guy is so awesome, isn't he?
Luke Scott?
Yeah.
No, I don't really know him that personally other than when we've had him on the show and then just having read a lot of the stuff he's posted over the years. But it is funny. I told you I do occasionally still post on Muscular Development. It seems almost any time I put up a post, either John Meadows or Scott Stevenson comes in and they're like, spot on observation. And I'm not gonna lie. Like, that's when you pat yourself on the back.
Yes, yes.
Shit, they agree with me. I'm good.
So let me ask you this then. This is, it's bringing you on to an extent. It's also a selfish thing for me because, like I said, I've always looked up to you. I've always looked up to Adam, and I want to hear from you. So I can still have fun podcasting. I like podcasting. I do it because I enjoy doing it. What would you suggest I do to continue loving podcasting and not go down the road of David Johnston to the point of burning out?
Yeah, I think that's the first thing. You know, even when we were talking in the weeks leading up to me recording the first episode of Beyond Driven, it became really, you know, clear to me what you were telling me, what your schedule looks like, that, you know, it's very similar to where mine has been the last decade. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, all the years I was working like that, Adam would always be in my ear. Oh, you work too hard. Da, da, da. Well, again, I did it with an end goal in mind. You know, here I am, 37, in a good position to have a decent savings account and making sure our house is getting paid off, making sure we're paying off Nikki's parents' house. You get the point. Like, I worked really hard when I was younger on the premise that when I got a little bit older, hopefully I can kick back a little bit. Now you might just be in a position where you just got to grind right now. You said you've only been married 7 months. You know, you basically got to build your legacy or whatever you want to call it. You got to build your safety net. And I think everybody has to go through that. If you're in an industry, you know, we all know there isn't money in bodybuilding. The money in bodybuilding is not in the actual bodybuilding. It's in all the tangential stuff, whether it's the supplement industry, whether it's the show promotion, whether it's the coaching, or whether it's, you know, some form of media, which is what you're doing, you know, combination of some of those things. So you're doing the right stuff where, you know, you're in the fields where you can actually make money, but you're just going to have to hustle for a while until you're really confident
secure. For me, man, it's not even that. I mean, I could build my business without podcasting, and I was very successful at it just being on one show, you know, with Bodybuilding Nerds, and really even that, but Bodybuilding Nerds wasn't even really creating my main revenue. I mean, I was doing it outside of that just on word of mouth, just a tiny, tiny, minuscule amount of advertisement. The business was going to the point where I had more clients than I could take. But I just loved doing it, and I love doing it more. Like, I'm podcasting all the time now, and it's something I really enjoy. So my question to you isn't like, how do I do it as a successful business? Just how do I keep loving it, you know, and not end up going down, you know, that path where I say, well, fuck it, I'm out.
Well, the money thing I was bringing up just because, you know, if you want to be successful, one of the things that you might well have to do is just keeping tabs on your investment. You know, how much time are you pouring into this each week?
Gotcha.
And what kind of emotional gratification are you getting out of it? You know, my time investment with Geared Up was minimal each week. It was at most 3 hours to record and maybe 1 hour to write the script at most, usually less. So you're talking 4 hours tops. When I started doing my own podcast, you know, now I had to not only do the record time, which is 3 hours, I had to do the script time, which is an hour, but also securing the people, technical issues, all that crap. So now it's going from a 3 to 4 hour per week investment up to a, you know, a 6 to 8 hour week per, you know, investment per week. And as stupid as it sounds, you know, I look at things like that almost on a mathematical level. You know, how much am I putting into this and what am I getting out of it? And I don't mean money. I mean joy, you know, fun. You call it whatever you want. Use whatever word you want. But bottom line, if you're pouring a lot into it and you're not getting a lot of joy out of it, eventually you're going to fucking hate it. Simple as that. So the main thing I would say is just kind of looking at that almost from a numbers perspective. If you're putting more into it than you're getting out of it, the only time that makes sense is if it's a long-term investment, meaning you might be putting in 60, 70 hours a week right now to get all this done. You might even be hating some of it, because you have to keep your mouth shut about certain things that you'd rather not. If you feel that down the road it's going to serve your cause, whatever that cause might be, whether it's creating a culture like I was talking about, whether it's becoming a millionaire, whatever, you know, that's on you. You're the one that has to figure out where does Scott want to be in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, so on and so forth. And that end goal is going to kind of determine the steps that you have to take to get there and how you're going to take them. So I think if you're constantly doing that self-assessing, you know what I mean? That, first and foremost, is absolutely key. And that's part of the reason, you know, Geared Up was really successful, because for so long, you know, everything Adam did, the return was huge. And I'm not talking money. I'm talking, like, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was exciting. Yeah. It was sexy. You would hear things and see the direction that things were going and how we could possibly manipulate small things within the industry and, you know, something like the Gathering of the Good Guys. You know, being able to have the power to rally 20 awesome pros all into one.
Wow. Yeah.
And like not charge money for it and not do it under the auspices of any, you know, official organization, that made us feel great. You know, I'm sure more so for Adam than me, but he had to be on cloud fucking nine.
Hell yeah, man. Off. Hell yeah.
Well, see, and that makes the investment worth it. You know, all the time that he poured into it, there's his payoff. You know, he's proud as shit of that. And I guarantee you he'll go to the grave proud as shit of that, as he should. And that's kind of my point. You just got to make sure with all this stuff that the return is there. It doesn't have to be clients. It doesn't have to be money. But it has to be something that justifies your efforts and energy. You know what I mean? Then I think the other thing is just making sure, which obviously this relates, but making sure you're doing it on your terms, you know. Each person has to kind of determine how much shit they're willing to eat, for lack of a better phrase. And in anything you do in life, there's going to be some degree of that. You know, if you're married and you have to ask yourself at times, is it really worth bringing up, you know, how you parked the car because you parked like an idiot? Is it worth making that fight, or do I just let it roll?
Yeah.
Anything you do in life with other people requires some degree of compromise and, you know, give and take. And you just have to make sure that when you're doing this, if you want to politic to get the truth out there, is that what matters most to you? Does it matter that much to you? You know what I mean? That's going to determine how you go about doing the show and the guidelines within which, you know, you're willing to do your shows. Real good example, I was always really transparent on the show, but at the same time, I didn't always, you know, like, I know certain things going on within the industry that I don't talk about on the show just because it'd be career suicide to do so. And I didn't feel morally bad about that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't have a responsibility to tell every single person in my life every fucking fact that I know.
You know, that's a good point right there.
You know, but at the same time, yeah, you don't have a responsibility per se, But there does come a point where you say, all right, am I aiding and abetting? You know, am I lending support to something that I think is bad and wrong?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
So good example with the promoters, with, you know, NPC shows. There were times when we had guests on where I felt like I could have fought them into the ground, you know, because their logic just wasn't there. What they were saying didn't add up.
Right.
And there came a point where I would step back and say, is this really going to serve my larger cause? You know, because I'm a fucking pit bull when I get into an argument.
Yeah, it's, and I could tell, man, I could see that in you. And that's why, yeah, you just, I sometimes, maybe you're right, it's just better to not latch on.
but it depends on the particular topic and the particular issue. You know, like you started out talking about Aaron Singerman. You know, I don't know Aaron at all. We had him on the show once. He was super fun to interview.
Because, yeah, like he, super cool.
He's got a lot. He's got a ton of personality. He speaks really openly, not really guarded about any topics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'll. This is gonna sound strange. You might not agree with me, but I think Aaron has actually branded that personality. Huh. You know, he learned long ago that being super open and to the point benefited him within this industry.
Sure.
Because so many in the industry aren't like that. Sure. So like he'll openly talk about getting into the pro hormone industry and how it looked like the government was going to shut him down, but he took a risk and whatever.
Yeah. That's part of his thing for sure. I agree.
But the bigger thing with Aaron, you know, the old saying where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't know the details on Prime. I don't know the details on his rift with Palumbo. I don't know any details. All I know is a lot of fucking people have had a lot of fucking problems with him.
Yeah. Yes,
you know what I mean? True. And that's kind of my point where I don't know Aaron at all, but if I had the opportunity to get in bed with him, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think you're going to rally and fight him, or even fight, you know, that approach. Everything he did might have been legal. It might have been ethical. I don't know.
You know what? But furthermore, as crappy as it is, I didn't care about it nearly as much as the amount of energy I put into it, just because, right, I felt like it needed to be done. And just because there was a minute, I felt like I needed to be right.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's, you know, like I said, I hit a point with the industry in general where I just feel there's a lot of, I don't know if the right word's drama, just mental energy put into stuff that it shouldn't be put into.
Yeah.
Like I said, just the sheer amount of people bickering about why classic physique sucks and why it doesn't suck and why men's physique sucks. And all I know is that bodybuilding in the beginning for me was nothing but a very positive thing. You know, it made me feel like I was striving to become a better person, and I was even helping other people to strive to become better people. Not necessarily morally better, but more in control of their life, more discipline, more work ethic, a stronger work ethic. And to me, that's why I got into training, you know, personal training. I think anyone that gets into it does so because they just love being in the gym and they're so passionate about bodybuilding. They want to find a means to earn money while being in the haven that they love, you know, so they go into personal training.
Sure.
I'm sure that's why I did it. I'm sure that's why Adam did it. I'm sure it's why all of us do it at some point. And then you got to find a way to make money doing it. But, you know, when I would do it, obviously my clients in the beginning weren't competitors and they weren't bodybuilders, but you know, I shared this whole bodybuilding mentality and lifestyle with them so they could kind of see what it was all about. And there was always a certain respect that, you know, we always hear how the general public looks down on bodybuilders, but when you really show someone like, this is how I eat, this is how I live, this is how I train, there's usually an admiration, if nothing else, you know, an abstract appreciation for somebody willing to put that kind of work into something. Right. So when I would work with the general public, they always respected what I did. But then when you started getting them in that direction, you know, where they're really dropping a lot of weight and getting stronger and they get that discipline and that self-confidence and all that, to me, that was the payoff. Like, I loved working with a client who had really bad self-esteem when we first started, and then they put in, you know, the requisite work.
And 6 months later, personal difference in their lives.
Yeah, they're down 40, 50 pounds. They're fitting in pants they haven't fit into since high school. They're having sex with their husband with the lights on again, you know, all that stuff. And you start realizing, like, you know, I did something in this world that meant something. You know, it mattered. It mattered to this person. They're going to write a testimonial, which that's not really the big deal, but they're going to remember you. You know, they're going to remember everything you did, and you went to war. to help this person. Kind of like I was talking about why I hired Porter. You know, mm-hmm. I knew that he was invested. I knew it mattered to him. And I always wanted to make sure that I did that when I helped other people as well.
I think that's I think that's a great point, man. That right. You know, and that's something I'm gonna hold on to. I'm gonna make sure that as long as I do this or anything, that I do it because I can hopefully make a difference in some way. We all love David Johnston because of your viewpoints and the way that you're able to articulate them. But first and foremost, you know, we all want you to be happy, and I think I speak for everyone saying that you know, we want you to do what you want to do. So we'd love to hear you back on Beyond Driven. We'd love to hear you back on Geared Up. That would be exceptionally awesome. But you know, we also respect you know, your decisions, man. So I'd love to have you back here some other time and maybe pick a topic, something else that we can talk about and discuss, because I know that everybody else out there would love to hear from you more.
Hey, let me know. For the most part, as long as I don't got to do all the button pushing, because that's apparently the part that I can't handle. But beyond that, yeah, I'm typically game for stuff like that. You know it.
All right, David. Well, thanks for being with me. Guys, this has been David Johnston from Geared Up and Beyond Driven.
Peace, everybody.